You're listening to a recording from the Open Society Institute, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
I want to introduce two people, actually. We also have a surprise visitor, Todd. Where's Todd?
Right here.
Oh, Todd, there you go. So first, Ashin Nayaka received his PhD from the Faculty of Social Science, Department of Ancient Indian and Asian Studies in Magad University in India. He's currently a visiting scholar at Columbia. His doctoral dissertation focuses on the role of Buddhism in social, cultural, and political developments in Burma. He's also the founder, director of the Buddhist Missionary Society in New York, and he's published many articles on Buddhism and human rights and related subjects. Now, Todd is the former public affairs officer. That's like the top, you know, used to be called USIS. I don't know if you know, the United States Information Service in Rangoon. It's not really part of our embassy, but it's part of, I mean, your taxes are paying, we're paying for Todd's to reach out to the Burmese in a very, in many ways. We were, through the American Center, we were giving surreptitious and more open courses on a variety of things. In fact, our debate people, Noel and his gang, did some stuff there. We sent him Eric Stover from Berkeley Human Rights Group. The three human rights lawyers, sorry, right here. That's right. Kelly, Heather, and Sandra Colliver went there on their vacation, and I said, you can only go to Burma if you speak at Todd's place. So did I forget anybody else who came to you? They don't really know Yuki. Actually, we also have Nancy Temethane, who worked at the embassy. She happens to be in exile now here. I'm sorry, what am I calling you? Judy. Judy. It's not Nancy, but anyway, it's... So Todd will tell you a little bit after. Ashin Nayaka will say some remarks about the Saffron Revolution. And then if you have some questions for him, then I want... Maybe before the questions, I want Todd also then talk about his experience there. He had a class teaching English to monks and nuns. And then you also tell them about the debate. You had debates with monks also.
Okay, my name is Nayaka. I'm Burmese Buddhist monk from Burma. But I was born in Burma, but grew up in India. So today I'm supposed to explain something about Saffron Revolution. Right, Saffron Revolution, very interesting topic in the world today. Right, so you know, in Burma, you know, Buddhist monks are the peace of nation. Right, but today we are prime target by military government. So I will say something about from religious point of view and how Saffron Revolution we started and how it will go on. So today we are, you know, facing great challenges in Burma. Not only Burmese people are facing this great challenge. It is rulers, military generals are indeed confronting, you know, or facing, you know, they are also facing very critical piece of history in their life. So since, you know, crackdown took place to stamp out Buddhist monk, military governments lost in their credibility, legitimacy, and they are claimed as Buddhist. Not only in our hearts, you know, they are no longer be worthy to be recognized as ruler in Burma. So I have spoke today with some Buddhist monks, those who are leading in this struggle. We will never be turning back this our religious obligation. Saffron Revolution is, you know, like a, you know, non-violent struggle or moral code, which literally means, you know, holding on the truth and self-realization, self-modification. It's very, you know, how to say, best method in against military government. But there is history of conflict between, you know, conflict in Burma, like between two dominant posts, like spiritual authority and military tyranny. But, you know, this is not, you know, but I like to clarify, this is not power struggle, but a conflict between peace and moral, you know, moral freedom on one side, and political repression on the other. So we just came to Sri, chanting peace, just for peace. Our focus was, you know, our focus was clear. We like just more conventional direction, more harmonious society in all world of life. This is our just, you know, focus. That means our focus is just when Burma is facing critical condition, our focus was happy ending. But there was tragedy. You know, there's tragedy, there's, you know, crime against humanity. You know, we feel, you know, killing Buddhist monks or torturing, forcing to disrobe, is horrifying crime against humanity. So I'm sure this, with mighty force, military government may be controlling Sutri or monastery across the country, but this is difficult to control our heart, our soul, our determination. This is what we call suffering revolution.
Shinaika, Can you say a few words about the monk leaders who are in hiding and running in the jungles right now? We were on a panel just a few weeks ago, and we patched this monk leader who's still on the run, right, Ugambira? Or have they caught him now?
Today, appeared one news article in New York Times. It's over. That he's the president of...
That's somebody else. That's
Ugambira. He's now in Thailand.
But that's not our monk.
Monk? Yeah.
That's our monk?
No, another monk. He's
that's another
president.
One. Right. But Ugambira, the one we talked to on the cell phone...
He's
still running.
His life is uncertain. No,
that's right.
Very worried about...
Could you say a few words about that?
Yeah,
about
Ugambira,
him.
He's a
nom de guerre.
We have been working with Ugambira since last 2 weeks, maybe.
Right.
But now we don't know where he is.
But he last called into Radio Free Asia last Thursday, and he made a statement. He made a statement that he said he hasn't slept under any shelter for the last two days or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is that someone you knew? This is all off the record. This is just internal. Is that someone you knew before?
From this leader?
Yeah. Did you know Ugambira from?
We have regular contact since Suffering Revolution started. We have regular contact with those leading monks, especially because they like to send their message through, especially to New York, to raise our awareness of our movement. But several monks' lives, their fate is uncertain. So it's never have been in Burmese history. So far as I have learned about history in Burma. So it is very tragedy in history of all. So we must, you know, how to say, we just like to send our message. This message is from inside. I spoke several months day before yesterday. Our message is from inside, from our determination. But how to say, Burma's problem is serious threat to American foreign policy. It is regional partners. You know, Burma's crisis is a crisis to American value and international community. So if Burma's this tragedy is, you know, an address or remains an address, I think bloody civil war or bloody crackdown, part of bloody crackdown or bloody civil war most like to continue?
So, Chinnayaka, we didn't tell you this. Actually, he doesn't know that we are taking up a collection. You see, you were here under false pretenses. For the monks in hiding, I know. So this part, Yotso, you'll have to zap this part because I'm sure we're not allowed to do this.
Now, final, oh, you know, final message. Okay, listen. Not only monks, several nuns, you know, we are, you know, taken and annual location, we are raped by military police. It's very terrible. We got news from inside.
So, if you have, if you just have some questions.
If you have further question, I will be happy to answer.
Let's have Todd say something, then you can ask questions the rest of the time, because I think that'll be make it very interesting.
Yeah.
And I would like people here who have been to Burma, especially Dr. Brodley, the child psychiatrist who's been inside Burma and worked with trauma victims, and he's from Swanky Place in Connecticut, and he volunteers his time to go, and he, as soon as this uprising happened, he said, Maureen, when can I go, you know, to the border, because there's a lot of trauma victims there as well. So Todd, it's all yours. You have take about 8-10 minutes, and then we'll come back to questions for everybody.
Yeah, it's good.
Sure, I can't offer the same perspective that Chinnayaka has been able to, but I just came back from Burma about 2 months ago, and the first thing I want to say is thank you to OSI for all the help. I know many of you work here and maybe haven't been able to go to Burma, but we worked so well with you guys for the last couple of years on scholarships, on debate, on many different programs. I think that OSI is a natural for Burma because of the society is so closed, and you see what happens when a society is that closed and there's so much secrecy in a society that people just can't learn the most basic information. One thing that I did when I got there was I really wanted to work with new audiences. We had worked for a long time with a lot of very the kind of Burma-born Chinese elite in Rangoon who were pretty well educated already and wanted to study in the U.S. But I realized I want to reach some people who are not from that demographic and expand it. And the best, easiest way to do that was through the Sangha, through the monks, because a lot of them came from outside Rangoon and were very ambitious, very eager to learn more about what was going on. And if anyone's been to Burma, you know how often you'll be approached by a monk trying to practice his English. And I took advantage a little bit of being the foreigner and tried to mix it up a little bit. We did nuns and monks together in the class, which didn't really happen that often. And it was good because the nuns were the best students, and so they got the guys working hard. And you know, girls do their homework and guys don't. So they they actually kept them going. One thing that really struck me was that I taught about a class for 2 years. It evolved. New people came. People dropped away. Overall, it was about 40, almost 50 people in all. And almost one of them was from Rangoon Division. As you know, Burma has six states, six divisions. And I was struck by how rural it was. People were all from villages, and all from villages with pretty basic infrastructure. There would have been no school, only the monastery, so they were sent there at a very young age. And these were kind of the all-stars. They went from the local monastery to Mandalay, usually, and then down to Rangoon. And I was really struck by their commitment, by their desire, not just to learn English, but to learn about what was happening in the world, and also about this interesting relationship they had. They had this privileged position in Burmese society, but they were also, they felt in the city that they really wanted to prove themselves too, that they had something to say, that they had something to give. And we had a lot of conversations about socially engaged Buddhism that you see in the Mahayana tradition a lot, with Thich Nhat Hanh and with the Dalai Lama, of course. And they were very interested in that. So we talked a lot about what's the role of the monk. Is it to meditate in the forest, or is it to run a clinic, or is it both? And how do you balance those two things? One thing I want to mention that OSI was very helpful with, we had three or four visits from the debate team, Noel and Marston.
Noel here? Is he in town? Did he get the invitation? Yeah, he must have.
So
they're not here. Marston is not based here.
He's
only
in
Noel.
London, right? Yeah.
Nina's not here either, right?
Okay. Well, we brought them, and they did a special course for the monks on debate, giving them basic tools of debate, and they loved it. And we would debate topics in Buddhism, and then later political issues too. So, and then they were bringing that technique back into the monasteries to use that as a way to teach English. And debate in Burma is such a natural fit because people love to argue and, you know, love to chat and love to kind of challenge each other on things. And it was one of the best experiences was doing that. We also, and what was wonderful is maybe it was the privilege of being an outsider, but they would really let their guard down after a while because they didn't have to keep up appearances with other Burmese and say, okay, I must always act in a dignified, serious fashion. So people would just go after each other in terms of, you know, personal attacks during the debates. It was wonderful. So just to see that kind of open exchange of views and just hear from them their experiences, which are really, you know, pretty severe, some of them. Several of them were orphans and had been placed in the monastery at a very, very young age. Some of them were had you know, many siblings die of illnesses that in the West we don't really get anymore. And they're just very intent. All of them want to study overseas, and two of them now are. One's a PhD student at University of Bombay, and another is studying at Chula Longkorn in Bangkok. And he recently told me he had participated in the demos in front of the Burmese embassy in Bangkok, and so probably wouldn't be returning to Burma anytime soon. So I just, first of all, so I want to say thank you to OSI for all your support over the last couple of years. One more thing I want to add about the library. One thing we did a lot of, I worked with OSI a lot in Albania when I was posted there about 10 years ago. And we did a book translation program, and we had a big library with about 20,000 members, 600 people a day. And monks and nuns were a very important part of that group, and were among the most avid readers of the BBC Burmese service, RFA Burmese service, Voice of America Burmese service news that we would post on sort of China style onto some bulletin boards.
DBB?
DBB, of course, yeah, thanks. So we also screen DVB News once a week, the weekend bulletin. So that's I'll just stop there.
Okay. Before we open for questions, I'd like to introduce two other visitors who are here, Dwelling and Ray Nang from Women's League of Burma. They're lobbying the United Nations about 1325, and I wondered if they could just say just 1 or 2 minutes about what it was you were doing and what you hope to achieve here.
Hello, everyone. As Maureen has introduced, my name is Lui Nang, and this is my colleague Doylin. Could you stand up? We are both from the Women's League of Burma. It's an umbrella organization comprised of 12 women's organizations based along the Thai-Burma borders, India-Burma borders, and some of the members' organizations are also from China-Burma borders. And we come here especially to lobby the United Nations, especially the different country permanent mission to the United Nations during the General Assembly and also the advance of before the Donor in Fact Week. And what we mostly do, okay.
You can talk about 1325.
Yeah.
You guys know what 1325 is?
It's
more than 1310, sorry.
UN Security Council Resolution 1325 on peace, on women's and peace and security. And the reason we are lobbying for this is really important, is and UN Security Council resolutions, and it's every country, UN members country is obligated to follow that resolution, implement that resolution. We just like to show that they had an open debate on the 23rd on these resolutions. And like every country would come and make a statement. and also on how they have implemented that. We just like to show that, to show that how the military regimes has not even being to implement that and even violate that resolutions, like in Burma. Like when we see Burma, it's like seeing two pictures. One picture is like to the people in the ethnic area, to the women in the women, especially in the ethnic areas, and also women who are in the central Burma who are taking part in the recent crackdown, in the recent protests, and how the regime has cantered down them, how the regime has oppressed these women in different places. They are like similar circumstances how the military regime is doing. As the monks has mentioned before, that there are also nuns that are joining the protest, and also women that has been taking an important role, active roles in the protest, but they are being detained, being arrested. Even during the protest, they are being sexually harassed by the military authority police. And women who are being arrested, detained in the prisons, are also being sexually harassed by the police officer. We call it long chain in Burmese. And like there are many women who are in hiding now, who are on the run, who have left their breastfeed baby with their mothers-in-law and parents-in-law, and are in hiding. There are also mothers who have to worry because their husband is in jail, and how they worry for their husband, how they would be in jail, and also worry back for their children because they are in hiding, and their mothers-in-law and mothers are being detained by the authority, and asking them if these women surrender to the authority, they will release their daughter, they will release their mothers and mothers-in-law. And people will not know the real situations, what is happening in Burma, what's going on in Burma. We keep getting that information every day. Like there are still women who are running around, who are still in hiding, and it was like on the 23rd, on the open debate day, there were like four women from inside who are in hiding now, who are really taking a leadership role during the protest, prepared a statement and sent it to the United Nations, sent it to it's out there, you can get the information. And still this, the authority, what we want to say is that military regime is trying to lie the world, still that trying to like close all that down, what's happening in Burma, what they have done to the people, the monks, the nuns. And we just got the information that nuns are like the ones we used to pray. Like we just can't believe how they can rip like these nuns, and how they have, what kind of courage they got and to do this to all these monks. What we also, like the another side in the ethnic area, it was in September, like last month. Like just like there's still rapes and gross human rights violations continues to happening and committed by these military regimes. It's like the international community is focusing on the recent crackdowns, but we should also not forget what is also happening in the ethnic areas in the countryside, in a remote area. They still have their troops and deploying more their troops in that area, and all these troops have a total control in the areas. And all these women suffer from that, from the sexual violence, from gang rapes. We're just talking about that the Myanmar ambassador, a report that make a statement at the open debate on the 23rd. They keep saying the word, like, they have this policy, they have this program that for the women development, mentioning that it's so shameful to mention, like, there's the government's in effort to promoting gender equality. They work hand in hand with the women's organizations such as Myanmar Women's Affairs, Myanmar Child and Mortality. Those three organizations who are working, focusing on women. These three are comprised of their family members, the gender voices, those in the Congo's groups. Like, imagine there are more than 50 million people in Burma, populations in Burma. And women accounted for more than 50% of the population. Then we have only these three organizations, women's organizations running in the country. There's no freedom of women that can found their association to work for the development of women, for the well-being of women and children. There's no freedom of doing that. And they also keep saying there's another point that he mentioned that to the express it to the president, saying that Myanmar tradition play an important part. What is it? Myanmar traditions have always safeguarded and guaranteed the equalities of men and women in both to own a property and inheritance. If you go to all that ethnic area, ask this woman, do you want to own your house? And they don't even have their house, and their house can be burned anytime by their soldiers. What they will simply say is, we want to own our body. What does it mean to own our property when you cannot own your body? A soldier, this soldier can touch you anytime, can take you away, can rape you, can kill you. What they would say is just they want to own their body. Like, this is what the international community, who are also going to Burma, will not be able to see. And where all these gross human rights violations that committed by all these military regimes is happening, all this remote area. And the international aid cannot go to that area. They cannot see that. And their government will not allow these people to go because they have let all these soldiers, all their soldiers, to do what they want, to control over the economy and to do what they want, give them the impunity, give them license to do anything they want to this local area. And that's what we wanted to give a message here. Simply, we don't talk about all the other. Just, we need your help. We need you, or we are really like coming here. We feel so warm seeing all these people having sympathy for us. But still, sympathy is not enough. We need the action. Like, actions can also mean anything. You know, talk to the government and even like money for these women who are working with the people on the ground here to support them. And also like the activity here for the people who are in hiding, and also worry for their daughters and children, what are they going to eat, and also the family members, how are they going to survive, and people who have been in jail and came out of jails, released from jails, it's so difficult for them to do business. I just talked with my colleagues yesterday, and it's so difficult because the government is always following them and checking them. Like, this is so difficult for them, and there's all these different kind of support and that are still needed in Burma now. Thank you so much.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Wei Nai.
So if those of you who have questions, please maybe take that microphone right in the, just come on up and address it to whoever you want. I'm going to ask Shinayaka something about something that Wei Nai mentioned. You know, they're trying to smoke out this terrific monk, one of the leaders, the one who called in and said, I haven't slept under any shelter. They've arrested his whole, they know who he is, I guess. They've arrested his whole family, correct?
Yeah.
They've arrested his whole family, totally innocent, and to smoke him out, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I just wondered if you would mention, talk about that. And would they torture the family as well, do you think?
Well, there's no torture.
There's no torture?
They were arrested.
There's no torture, then I don't want to ask that question, sorry.
No. They were not arrested. No, I don't want to talk.
We don't know, yeah.
Yeah,
right. Okay. So, Abby.
Do I have to speak into the mic? I just wonder if Ashinaika could speak a little bit about the history of the Sangha's part in revolution in Burma, particularly their role in 1988.
Yeah. Throughout Burmese Buddhist history, when country was in crisis, when country peace emergency, Buddhist monks took great role in creating peace, peace and harmony in the society. But country's order to this inevitable situation, this is the reason why we got involved in politics. That means, you know, we have, you know, doctrinal justification, the teaching Buddha introduced us. We have obligation to speak out what's happening inside the country, we have obligation to pierce the through. So when, you know, 1988, Buddhist monks also took a great role. But, you know, several monks were killed, as you know well. Now, I already mentioned 300 monks are all and still in prison. But now this, you know, this last settlement struggle, I don't know how many monks have been, you know, torturing or have been taking and this close location. We are very serious about this matter. How many monks were killed? I don't know. But I have day before yesterday information from the monk who are collecting this material and video footage, identity, monk's identity, to publish a report. But it is very hard to get all information within weeks or months. So, how to say, you just asked me the role of how Buddhist history of monks in politics. So, we have, as I told you, we have, you know, doctrinally obligation to get involved in, you know, serving society. So, Buddhism has, you know, established religious society. We call Sangha. It is, you know, very well established society, governed by, you know, highest democratic principle. It's earliest monastery institution. We can say earliest monastery institution in the world. But it, you know, we are, you know, it is, you know, how to say, act like a bridge between people and Buddhist monk. We are doctrine close to humanity. So this is the reason why we, especially Buddhist monk, you know, announce religious against military junta who abuse Buddhism. You know, so this just how to say, from religious point of view, our role, you know, is doctrinally unquestionable. Means doctrinally justifies. So, but you know, today, Burmese monk level as like terrorists. You know, those who speak out are terrorists. You know. So, you know, how to say, from the when Buddha introduced during his lifetime, Buddha introduced this method or this teaching to defend Buddhism, to safeguard Buddhism from, you know, like, you know, tyrant rules. So this we have, but how Burmese, you know, government try to, you know, portray country as normal. Now Burmese military government is trying to, you know, portray country as normalcy, like normal. But behind the scenes, they are still crackdown, still arrest, you know.
Thank you, Ashin. Todd, can you say a few words about the 88 generation students who started the protest? Because you knew them quite well.
Yeah, there was a big release of Burmese political prisoners in 2005. And Judy knows way more about this than I do. But a lot of them are part of the demonstrations in 1988. And also had met more people who were in prison, and they, during this wave of release, after this wave of releases, they all came together and formed a network called the 88 Students Generation. And this group had been very active in the last couple of years as the NLD, people of the National League for Democracy, got older and were just kind of tired from being under such scrutiny all the time. This group, which was in its late 20s, early 30s, under the leadership of Minko Nine, Koko G, really came together and did things like human rights education, basic healthcare announcements, just trying to become community workers and really practice a lot of the, see what they could get away with doing in terms of educating people and providing assistance.
Right.
And they were arrested, of course, before the... they were the ones who initiated the demonstrations right after the doubling of the fuel prices. They were arrested, and then the monks came out.
There were some of them are still on the run, I believe, but they almost got everybody,
almost
right?
All of them. Yeah.
How many were there?
88 students. 12? It's a loose group, but I think leadership...
Zaza, do you know? Zaza? Yeah. How many 88 generation students? It's a test. If you fail, you don't get... No, the leaders, the leaders. Minko Nai and Kukuji, about 12?
I mean, 12 leaders?
Yeah.
13. Only one is
at
Lax.
Is that Nila?
No.
Teichui?
No, no. Teichui's already taken. They took him in.
Okay.
He's getting... they got him.
Okay.
You know, they got him because they got someone else who was very low threshold on torture. So when they got that person, we sort of had a heads up. We said, we were told... If he doesn't get a sanctuary in a day or two, he's going to be taken in. Mm. And it's just awful because we just knew what was going to happen, and then that's exactly what happened. And he was on the run for so long, giving interviews to BBC, DBB, Radio Free Asia. So you can imagine, they had, was like a massive nationwide manhunt. They had pictures every port, everywhere. And then with these interviews, you can imagine how ticked off they were. Mm. So what they were, I hope he survives the detention. Mm. We have another question.
Thanks. I'm Phoebe. I work in the women's program here at OSI. I was actually at the 1325 debate at the Security Council on Tuesday, and just to throw in there that the British government or the UK actually called out Burma on the use of the military's use of rape to repress communities and as a sort of systematic tool. And when the Myanmar delegation stood up and responded to it, they said, we completely reject this. And by the way, the women's groups who are making this up, they're actually terrorists. You know, they're insurgents. So I just, you know, just the level of conversation. And when you had mentioned that they think of the monks as being terrorists, it's just incredible. But actually, a related question is that on the one hand, there might be this view of terrorism, but on the other hand, Buddhists do have a very high status in society in the way that people view them and a very important role in society. So I'm just wondering, my question is really around the military itself. You know, like in Kyrgyzstan, for example, when the revolution started, a lot of soldiers just threw down their weapons and joined the revolution. So I'm just wondering, when it comes to the role of the military in firing at the monks, like it just seems incredible because the monks have such an important role in society. So I'm just wondering how are these military people being brainwashed so much that they're willing to kill the most, you know, sort of precious people of their society? I don't know. Maybe you can just shed some light on where do these militants come from? How are they trained to carry out this kind of violence.
Day before yesterday, I was interviewed from BBC World Service. Did also ask the same question: are they Buddhist? Military rulers are they Buddhist? And yes, Buddhist. So why they kill Buddhist monks? This is question I always face whenever I lecturing in other university. Day before I was in Brown University. The same question I received. But what I have to say is, that's why I say they are, since they took this, you know, action, this drastic action, they are, of course, they are, you know, losing their, you know, credibility, their legitimacy, their claim as Buddhist. That's why they are not longer in Burma. They are not longer as worthy or as ruler in Burma. That's why we have, you know, high moral, you know, obligation to resume this, you know, struggle until, you know, this military government is deposed. Means we must change this direction. Otherwise, we will face more, you know, crackdown in Burma.
Dr.
Brolin?
I
good question. Yeah, I'm working. We are working about this. You know, tomorrow we have a conference in San Francisco to form an international Buddhist organization. But I'm not able to attend this conference because I'm working some important matters in White House, in National, Security Council in White House. They asking me to Kiev in New York. Today also I met some representative from U.S. ambassador in the United Nations. He call us to especially we have scheduled to meet President last Friday. But when President announced additional sanction to Burma, so we, our schedule has changed to next week. So we are working about this, especially, let me tell you, National Security Council, United States, and also Presidential Advisor, they like to know how our attitude, if American take leadership role in this crisis. This is very important. They like to know, but they have already interviewed about more than a week. They have already several people have interviewed about our role, our organization, our attitude. Because America had experience in Iraq, some religious leaders oppose Americans' intervention in Iraq. This is very critical question they ask. So we are working with other Buddhist organizations to address this issue. So several Buddhist organizations has expressed their concern and sent their letters to UN Security Council and Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to take take appropriate action to stop this, to stop killing or torturing Buddhist monks in Burma. But I think that's why we have we have a lot of resources now working internationally to immediately address this issue. This is what I can say.
But
right,
Gary,
now.
You're right.
So what I'm coming here to is I have one point to say Open Society Institute, if they can sponsor us to hold international conference on Buddhism, especially Buddhism, I will take role. I'm ready to take in leading role. I'm supposed to hold this in Bangkok, Thailand. I'm also working some university, Mahachulalongkorn University, yesterday, based in supervisor in that university. So this is a good question I have to answer quickly. Thank you.
So Jerry has to donate also to that conference, right? Shinaika, you have to write a proposal.
Right?
Really? Yeah. That's why I was late. I was talking to our president, Mr. Nair, who I tried to lure down. I told him we're going to bring him some little snack plate. Okay, never mind. Forgot. Where's Meryl? She's gone now. Oh, well. So we talked about that because we had Steve Crawshaw from Human Rights Watch was here also. We were talking about what are the bar is very high, Jerry. And you have, in order to do... war crimes, it has to be a war. Of course, you're having the war in the ethnic areas, but in the Rangoon thing was more arbitrary detention and torture. And
like Moscow.
Yeah, so genocide, in times of peace, it's like genocide, and people, countries are very reluctant to call it genocide because it gives them a great obligation then to deal with it. That's why even Darfur, a lot of people for a long time did not mention what it was. So I don't know. There is talk. And what I was asking Nair is whether we could have a private investigation headed by Bishop Tutu or something. And,
they have that new organization of elders.
Yeah. Yeah. But they will all be passing out in the heat of Burma. All the elders went there to investigate.
I just want to say one thing about the previous question, if the person's still here, about the military, was is that the military is really privileged. If you make it in the officer corps, you have a nice house. The military part of the new capital is much nicer than the civilian part of the new capital, fiber optic cables, the whole thing. You get to study at the new Defense Services Academy. It's a kind of a privileged core of people who are basically have a very isolated existence and not a lot of experience on the outside. So you're dealing with that kind of very insular culture too.
You mean those riot police who are? Well, I was told, I don't know, Todd, if you know, that they very often will bring out from the hinterlands so that you don't have Rangoon people wanting to shoot their own monks, for example. Mm. Right? Yeah. Please, get.
You know,
those who killed me, right? Yeah. Actually, the troops, can I sit down? The troops, they are mostly people who are on the streets. They caught them. They take the street children off the streets. They will get anybody, 5 person, if you want to retire, you get a 5 person soldiers replacing you. So they got all these people, and then they put them in training like 4 months, who are young, and then they started this brainwash. So when, as Todd said, they were giving, in their lives, they have never had anything because they were poor and, you know, so they were giving a lot of incentives. They were allowed to do whatever, you know, you can do rape, you can go and rob, you can do whatever, and they look the other way. That's life in the camp, boot camp. And so when they were sent to frontal areas, what happened was they were giving some tablets, simulants and any kind of drinks for the malaria purpose, but actually it's alcohol. So those things were included in those incentives.
So.
And they were allowed to shoot or burned or rape or anything like that. So now those kind of people who were in the frontal area were brought in. I heard they were from Karen rape area and Sean. They were brought in, and you can look from the faces that whenever they did something, they thought they were the enemy. Because they've been used to doing that all the time. Ethnic area. That's why we have a lot of places. Displacement. So these kind of people are used to brought into the towns. They've never been to Rangoon. And then they thought that these were enemies. They were probably do a lot of things. They were, and also part of it, some people you may notice that there were no, they were
shoes.
Wearing slippers. Yeah. They were not wearing shoes. What I understand is that those were the people who were from jail, who were previous soldiers maybe, or veterans, or murderers or whatever. They brought them out, put them in the uniform, give them a week of training, and then just ask them to kill. That kind of thing. So that's what we are seeing, really.
Go ahead. She wants.
Just like to add a bit on that, troops. I just read during the crackdown, I have a close friend who is in the army, but who is studying in Moscow, Russia. We have a chat over on the internet, like Gmail and Skype, quite sometimes. But during that, I was talking to him, like, they are all frustrated studying in Moscow.
They're studying in Moscow because there's a nuclear facility that the Russians...
Yeah, like more than 2,000 military general. All of them are like general. My friend is a captain now. It's a captain, and they have this, like, when they finish their high school, if they are like smart students, and mostly like people from the, like a smart student from a Burman society, community, those family members, and they will collect their name if they want to join the army, like study Cebu, training, I don't know, Sipu.
Officer school.
Yeah, officer school. Like most students like that in Burma, after you finish, after you graduate from high school, you go to a university. Like there's, university is closed, like there's no attractive to all these young people. So they end up in that. Mm-hmm. When they finish like 4 years training in Bien Ulun Military Academy in Bien Ulun, and they got this 6 month training Russian language, teacher from Russia come and teach them. After that, they go and study in Moscow. They got support. Like in Burma, they in Moscow they get like $250.
Wow.
And just for their living, for books and those things. And still in Burma, they still get their salary like 150,000 jet.
That's about 150.
The thing in Gaza.
But yeah, this a medical doctor is getting $20 a month.
Yeah. Then they can support their family for that. And I asked him, if he were there, what would he do? He said that there's nothing I can do. Now I have called my family to stay inside the house, and all of them are doing that. They call their family and they call their friends and brother, sister, not to go out of the street and stay in the room, because if they join that, something will happen to them, because they have to pay back all this money for the whole 4 years and for all they have studied in Russia. And they got a great privilege for that, because they are caught up in the systems already. They can't do anything. If they do something, and something will happen to their families. And that's why this troop, they cannot really do anything. Even the general, even the captain. And that's what my friends told me, explained to me. There's nothing we can do. We feel sympathy to our monk. We pay like respect to our monk, but we can't do anything like that. This is what has happened. They are in the system already, what the generals have made them in the program, set up in the program, in the system.
The generals also bought a lot of the senior abbots, correct? You know, the senior abbots of the sangha, with so that they were also indebted to them.
Yeah, they just like to misinform the world. They are with us like this. We have credible information from Burma. Generals have well planned to kill. There are, 47 Buddhist monks, senior monks, who are taking, like we call Sangha Mahanayaka, Sangha Council, State Sangha Council. When they refuse to sign, crack down Buddhist monk on, yeah. So there we are planning to kill those Buddhist monks.
Wait, what are they signing? They were supposed to sign.
Supposed to,
declare.
No. Support military government.
To support the military government.
Cracking down.
Yeah, okay.
So those who refuse are supposed to be killed. So we have this information from their own heart.
So they are
in very serious condition. We know well they are with us, because this religious, religious by God. They must be with us. There's only one monk who against this us. It's, Chakawaisiaro. He's on run now. He's hiding in military camp, I think so.
Oh, he's hiding in the military camp.
Yeah, yeah.
Because other people might get him.
Yeah, yeah. That's why no monks dare to, oppose this struggle.
There's one more thing, though. We've talked a lot about the military. There's also a group called the USDA, which is confusing if you're American, because you think of Department of Agriculture. But the USDA, Union Solidarity Development Association, typical kind of acronym, they are a kind of paramilitary force, people who aren't, they're kind of not doing much, and the government comes and pays them, and they're sort of this irregular army. So the government can, in its quest for legitimacy, can say, oh, we didn't do it, the USDA did it. They're sort of these shock troops. At the same time, people who want to get ahead, business people, let's say, need to join this organization in order to support it, So you have this kind of lumpen group that's the foot soldiers, and you have people who just want to make a living being compelled to join it.
Yeah, it's very much like Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. Left a lot of brown Nazi youth and
exactly.
stuff too.
I'm sure.
So finally,
we have information from Burma, Buddhist monk. They are supposed to resume this struggle again.
After the Lent, right now the danger.
Yeah. Now we have the today's the end of our
land,
you know, Buddhist land. So we have more freedom to mobilize to counter each other. So I think it is going to happen. So that's why let us, you know, we are now facing, you know, worst crisis. Let us hope for best future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, guys. I think we'll just cut it here, and then they'll still be around if you want to ask your questions. Thank you.